We have with us a Puerto Rican woman who has been around organizing for many years in New York City. She's a writer. She's a musician. She's an activist. She's the great-great-granddaughter of Eugenio María de Hostos. And she's here to talk to us about Eugenio María de Hostos, Aurora Flores.
Gracias, Ramon. Thank you. The legacy of Hostos is quite an extensive one. So I put this together. Ideals that take days to conceive, mature over centuries of struggle, wrote Eugenio María de Hostos. He was one of the most distinguished and illustrious men in Puerto Rico's history. He was known worldwide as an educator, a humanist, an abolitionist, a feminist, a philosopher, a writer, a politician, and above all, an early advocate of self-government for Puerto Rico. A Renaissance man of the Caribbean with a clear, liberal, international, and pragmatic mindset. He educated an entire continent and was called the citizen of America. He advocated for a federation of the Antilles, embracing Puerto Rico, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic. He taught Latin America how to think, and he devoted his life to seeking the political independence of Cuba and Puerto Rico. His many essays, articles, and books reflect his philosophy on social justice, political science, virtues, and moralities for social reform and advocacy. He was an important advocate for the abolition of slavery, the rights of Chinese laborers in Peru, and the higher education of women in law and science in Chile, playing an important role in reforming the educational system for women throughout Latin America. He established the first teachers' colleges and advanced methods for teaching throughout the Caribbean, in particular the Dominican Republic. He was known throughout Latin America as a publicist of civic reforms, a rationalist in ethics who believed that to be civilized and to be moral is the same thing. He was a writer of graceful and didactic prose. Eugenio María de Hostos y Bonilla was born on January 11, 1839, in the village of Rio Cañas near Mayagüez, Puerto Rico. He was the first of the Hostos family from Spain, and they didn't have an H then, it was Hostos with an O, who came from Spain and settled in Cuba. But he was the first of the family to be born in Puerto Rico in Mayagüez. He was first educated in San Juan, and then he was sent to Spain at 13 years old to study at the Institute of Higher Education in Bilbao, earning a law degree at the University of Madrid. And it was as a student in Madrid that he became interested in politics. And while studying law, he wrote newspaper and magazine articles on the need for autonomy for the Spanish West Indies, as it was known then. He distinguished himself as an essayist and orator in the movement to abolish the slave trade with Africa and to liberalize colonial rule. Already, he had conceived the hope that Spain's territories in the Antilles might be confederated as an independent republic. So, he joined the Spanish Republicans because their leadership promised autonomy for Cuba and Puerto Rico. And to express that hope, he wrote the first of more than 50 books, the allegorical novela La Peregrinación de Bayoan, in 1863, describing the voyage to Spain by the Arawak leaders of Puerto Rico, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic, advocating the independence and self-governing autonomy for these island nations. But 3 years later, in 1869, when the Republicans triumphed over the monarchy, Hostos' hope for peaceful change were dashed when the new Spanish constitution left colonialism firmly in place. He refused the post of governor of Barcelona, which they offered him, when he realized he was betrayed, and he headed for New York. Once in New York, Hostos joined the Puerto Rican section of the Cuban Revolutionary Party, organized by Cuban poet and patriot José Martí. And he established himself as the editor of La Revolución, the journal of the Cuban Revolutionary Movement. He was joined there, and his ideas were embraced by Ramón Betances, leader of the 1868 Grito de Lares uprising, along with Segundo Ruiz Belvis. Here, Hostos advanced his formula for an independent Antillean confederation with a base in Cuba, Puerto Rico, Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and Jamaica. However, he was also disappointed that in Cuba and Puerto Rico, there were many who wanted independence from Spain, but they did not want the revolutionary ideals. Instead, they preferred to be annexed by or be a part of the U.S. So 3 years later, he embarked on a tour of South America to promote the ideals of a united Antillano Federation to recruit support and raise funds for the liberation movement. He traveled within the U.S., France, Colombia, Panama, Peru, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela, San Thomas, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, and throughout Puerto Rico. And although he'd come from a family of privilege, wherever he traveled, he lived humbly among the people and the leaders that he was cultivating. In Peru, he helped to develop the country's educational system and spoke out against the harsh treatment and exploitation of Chinese immigrants there who had come because of the Chinese Revolution, and here they were known as the coolie trade. He spoke out against that. In Chile, he championed the cause of women's education, particularly in law and medicine. Hostos arrived in Chile in December of 1871. As professor of the University of Chile, he gave a speech titled The Scientific Education of Women, proposing that the government permit women into their colleges. He immediately began a controversial campaign of lectures and essays defending the women's right to education, observing and comparing the plight of women as es una planta que vegeta sin una conciencia que conoce su existencia. She's like a plant that vegetates without any consciousness of her existence. Hostos turned it around on the men, claiming that if women are charged with the upbringing of our children, how can they teach those children and develop their intellectual and mental capacities if she does not know how to direct her own life? Hostos went on to condemn the educational system in Chile with respect to women by pointing out the following. They have taught her to read so that she can read novelas. Sometimes she reads novels of religion. Sometimes she seeks refuge in the religion of the novel. She's been taught to write so that she may write the novel of her love in the stereotypes from the most stupid teachers of love who happen to be at hand. She's been taught to pray so that her lips may mechanically evoke what her conscious mind fails to understand. She's been taught to work so that she may do the same work mechanically every day, the work that men do not want to do. She's been taught to sing in order to enhance her attractiveness. She's been taught to play the piano all her life, to accompany the dancing of those who are fit only to dance. She's been taught to mistreat a foreign tongue so that she can forget or abuse her own. She's been taught to draw so that she can embroider to perfection or occupy her periods of boredom with the ideal of a man who she cannot find around her and who does not exist. Women have been reduced to the level of a two-legged animal that procreates its kind, that feeds its offspring from its breasts, that sacrifices to the life of the species its own individual existence. He went on to reason with the male educator, saying, the only thing needed for education is intellectual capacity and the exercise of reason. Reason has no gender, no sex. La razón no tiene sexo. It is the same faculty in men as in women, operating and functioning precisely in the same manner. Y es la misma facultad con su mismo operaciones y funciones en el hombre y en la mujer. If a man can recognize truth through the use of reason, so can a woman. In short, if a man is capable of higher learning, so is a woman. Soon after, Chile allowed women to enter its college educational system. In Argentina, he campaigned for the construction of the first trans-Andean railroad that, when built, was named in his honor. In Brazil, as correspondent for the Buenos Aires journal La Nación, he wrote a series of articles on the country's natural history. And after a brief return to New York in 1874, Hostos continued his travels first to the Dominican Republic, where he founded the first college for teachers, implementing advanced teaching techniques before going to Venezuela, where in 1877 he married the Cuban-born Belinda de Ayala. And their maid of honor was the renowned Puerto Rican poet, Lola Rodríguez de Tio. Hostos' career as an educator began in 1879 when he established himself in the Dominican Republic as founder and director of that country's first teacher's college. During this year, his first son, Eugenio Carlos, was born. For the next 9 years, Hostos worked intensively to reform the educational system in the Dominican Republic, often undertaking on his own the writing of the textbooks to be used. By 1881, his first daughter, Luisa Amelia, was born, followed by the birth of his second son, by Joan Lautaro, in 1882. In 1887, Adolfo José was born. As the first graduates of the Dominican Teachers College are inducted as alumni of the Instituto de Señoritas, led by Salomé Ureña de Enrique. The following year, Hostos creates the night school for the working class, o sea, la escuela nocturna para la clase obrera. And then he writes his classic book, Moral Social. In 1888, at the request of President Balmaceda of Chile, Hostos moved to Santiago along with his wife, his children, Eugenio Carlos, Luisa Amelia, Bayoan, and Adolfo, who were born in the Dominican Republic. He traveled to Chile via Panama and Curaçao. And in Chile, Hostos became the chair in constitutional law at the university and undertook another nationwide project in pedagogical reform. His pilot school became one of the leading educational centers in Latin America. And while in Chile, his son, Felipe Luis Duarte, was born in 1890. Hostos returned to Cuba in 1895 to take part in the renewed struggle for independence. In 1898, he returns to New York and founded the Liga de Patriotas, where he is named president. He then traveled with a delegation of Puerto Rican leaders, including Julio J. Hena, Manuel Zeno Gandia, and Rafael del Valle, to Washington, D.C., to argue with President McKinley for the independence of Puerto Rico. Again, Hostos' hopes were dashed as the United States government decided to retain Puerto Rico as a territory. He returned to Puerto Rico just long enough to establish in Mayagüez el Instituto Municipal. The Dominican government then called him to reorganize the public education system of the island. Hostos returned to the Dominican Republic in 1900 to serve as director of the Central College and General Inspector of Public Education. He continued to play a major role in reorganizing the educational and railroad systems until his death on August 11, 1903, at his home in Las Marias, Santo Domingo, where he remains buried in the Panteón Nacional until, as he requested, Puerto Rico is independent. This was a man who wrote his own epitaph that says, "I wish that they will say that in that little island of Puerto Rico, a man was born who loved truth, desired justice, and worked for the good of mankind." In 1938, the 8th International Conference of America, celebrated in Lima, Peru, posthumously paid tribute to Hostos and declared him Citizen of the Americas and Teacher of the Youth. Puerto Rico declared his birthday an official holiday. There's a monument honoring Hostos in Spain. In Puerto Rico, there are two monuments dedicated to Hostos, one in his native city of Mayagüez, created by renowned sculptor Tomás Batista, and another one in San Juan, created by José Buscaglia Guglielmetti. In New York, there is the Eugenio María de Hostos Community College in the City University of New York. And I'm very proud to be here in his name, in the name of the ancestry, in everything my mother and the family taught me, especially about liberation of women and speaking our opinion and not letting anyone define who we are. I'm proud to be here. I celebrate Hostos. We celebrate the legacy and that this institution stands firm. Yes. Pa'lante.